based on the legitimate production houses sharing minute or two clips of content that they have made and sell elsewhere, giving you that little free preview of, I don't know, anywhere between 1 and 5 minutes of content, to then encourage you, once you've watched it, to actually go to their website and pay for it.
And I have always wondered, and I will here reveal that I have seen some of these 2-minute or 5-minute or 10-minute clips. Boy, there's a limitless supply of these clips. I can't imagine, I don't really need to know, how the plot ends, which is often included anyhow. What possible conversion rate could there be on people who say, you know what, I want to see the full hour of this, but one thing I also know about internet content is that you don't need to have large conversion rates when you're dealing with mass bulk audience. Do you know the actual stats? I'm just kind of curious.
The conversion rates are very high. So there's still a large percentage of the population that will pay for online pornography.
Why?
Because the content that is available on these free sites tends to be of, first of all, short clips, although not all people need. Some people are just looking for short clips for obvious reasons. But more so than that, they're looking to for a specific genre or a specific star. They're looking for fresh content. The best way to explain this, and whilst I can't give you the exact conversion figures for any of those websites, I can say this. If you did not have a robust business model behind this, new stuff wouldn't be produced every day. And it's still being produced, mm-hmm. and it's still coming out, and it's still being sold. So something is happening there. People are paying for it.
Yeah, there's a working model.
There is a working model, not to mention the fact that people don't necessarily trust these files that you're watching on these websites. Who knows what kind of malware or other types of viruses are potentially embedded in these files, particularly if you download them to your computer.
Is that a real concern?
Absolutely, it's a real concern.
And you're seeing this as somebody who's involved with the industry? You're seeing that people like, what do they want, hard copies again?
So some people want hard copies. So some people want to, for example, rather than watching something on their phone or their computer, they'd like to watch it on a television, whether in their living room or their bedroom.
That's not hard to stream from
your... It's not hard to stream, but if you want to watch full content in full HD and so forth, and you may want to watch it more than once, people still buy pornography. There is also...
Like they're buying like Blu-rays and DVDs?
So DVDs are still sold actually for a different reason, and it may could be a surprise to people in the year 2024 that people are still buying pornographic DVDs.
Why are people buying porn DVDs?
Because there's no digital trace of you watching those or buying that or looking at that stuff online. There is a particularly, my understanding and from what I have seen, there is a large percentage of all male porn that is still sold on DVDs, and not just to a traditional audience that likes all male porn, which would be the gay male community, but the gay female community. And also there are a number of statistics out there now that 1 in 4 straight males are watching pornography that only features males as well, and they don't want a digital trace of those or a digital record of them watching those movies.
Hold on. So there's a viable market on, I guess, closeted gay men who want to watch gay porn and are afraid that if they click on gay porn on YouPorn, somebody will find out, so they buy a DVD?
I would say that's part of it, but I wouldn't use your terms. I wouldn't say necessarily that they're closeted gay men, because the statistics out there are 1 in 4 men who identify as straight and would never have a sexual experience with someone of the same sex are watching that. So I think it's wrong to classify traditional gay porn as only appealing to gay men or someone that is a closeted gay man. Just in the same way that there are many women out there who identify as straight and will always be straight who enjoy watching all female pornography.
That's wild. So these are straight guys who will send away for a gay porno DVD. But they're not gay.
They're not gay.
They want to watch gay porn.
Mm-hmm. And we don't call it gay porn. We just call it all male cast or an all male porn.
Uh-huh. And yet they're comfortable with that.
Yeah.
But they don't want anybody to ever know, I guess, because of reactions like mine, because it's hard for me to get my head around, if you're straight, why would you want to watch all male performers?
Correct. You will see many articles in many publications over many years now of this phenomenon of straight males enjoying all male porn and the Lord of DVD. That still exists.
Maybe that's not shocking that people who identify as straight have some kind of curiosity. I guess all you could say is that they are erotically interested in men having sex with men. Whether that makes you bi or gay is maybe a question for somebody else to answer, but they like watching it.
Certainly a question for somebody else to answer. I'm definitely not qualified to answer that. I just see the statistics. It's out there, and it's very much part of the industry. But that's not exploiting or part of the exploitation of these websites. So you do have this legitimate adult business, and that's not just the movies, by the way. Another growing industry are these so-called adult cams. So these are performers that will perform on live video feed for you, whether it be through an OnlyFans type arrangement, which is a subscription, which, by the way, is where a lot of those people that were previously on YouPorn and Pornhub have gone to places like OnlyFans. Or there are various websites out there and providers that will, instead of selling you movies or online pornography, you can actually interact with a performer and pay them tips in order for them to perform live for you over the internet. That's a big part of the business as well, sort of the modern day strip bar, the modern day strip club, the COVID-friendly strip club, if you want. And you can take that as far as the performer will want to go and as far as you want to go in a way that you can't do in a public setting. And then, of course, the adult toys as well, which is a huge business and growing rapidly.
Yeah, and extending my kind of comparison or metaphor of journalism to pornography, the question I had, when I think about conversion rates of giving away some content in the hopes that some people will convert to the paid content, a lot of the reason why people do that for us is because they believe in what we're doing. And they like us. They like hearing from us. And they want us to be paid for the work that we do. And I never imagined that dynamic existing for porn. Like, you know, this isn't fair that I'm using all this free pornography. How do I expect these poor pornographers to do their valuable work unless I chip in a little bit? I never thought that that would be a viable business model for the porn industry. I now see that I'm wrong about that, because when you actually move it from YouPorn to an OnlyFans, you do have that, I guess, parasocial relationship, or you can turn to the audience and say, hey, I can only do this if you support it. And that's a huge part of the industry now.
Absolutely. And there are performers now that are making millions, literally millions. And it's a very clever business model. It's a dangerous business model, but it works.
Dangerous why?
Dangerous because of exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously you have the safety of the barrier of the internet. I'd say it's a lot safer for a performer on OnlyFans to perform online rather than in a club.
But dangerous because there are thousands of people out there who think they have some sort of intimate relationship with you, and now it's a financial relationship as well as a sexual relationship, but it's distributed amongst thousands of people, and
it is.
All you need is one of them to be, yeah.
I think that's part of it. I think the other part of it is that the internet is forever.
Yeah.
You know, if a family member of yours, your mother or your aunt or your grandmother, whoever it was a stripper, I don't think anybody really worries about it. There aren't digital records of that. And, you know, people change. And young women and men enter this industry, maybe naive, maybe penniless. They have careers in it, and then they go on to do other things. The porn industry is not something that you can do your entire career, because as you age, you become less attractive to the viewer, unfortunately. People want fresh faces. So it's not a lifelong career. And the aftermath of pornography is very, very serious.
By the time we're grandparents, the president will have an OnlyFans page.
Well, things are changing. You know, attitudes towards pornographic actresses and actors are changing. They're still not there. There is still this weird paradigm in society in which people just don't like admitting that they watch this stuff. Yet, the numbers are very different. It makes more money than the motion picture industry. So if that's the case, who's buying this stuff? And more importantly, who's not?
Max Krangle, you're an interesting guy. Thank you so much for finding all the time to talk with me.
It's a pleasure.
That's your Canada Land. You can email me at jesse@canadaland.com. I read them all. Our website is canadaland.com. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Additional production and editing from Tristan Capicchione. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. I am your host, Jesse Brown. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. Audio journalist and author Rachel Matlow. Hello.
Hey, Jesse.
Glad to have you here. Listen, today on the show, Alberta's premier bans surgeries that were not actually happening and sets back sex education in schools by about 50 years. Not very libertarian of her, but Jordan Peterson visited the province and it would be rude not to welcome him with a gift. Welcome to Shortcuts, where we talk shit about the news.
Alberta's new plans for trans youth are making headlines across the country.
The province is introducing new parental rights rules that will impact everything from health care for transgender children to what educators can teach in the classroom.
I've been watching as well some of the incidents that have happened in sport. I just saw a video making the round about a rugby game where one woman was just picked up and pile-drived by a much stronger transgender female athlete.
Here's the thing. The Premier of Alberta is out here spouting misinformation to support her anti-trans policies because the player in that viral video that she's talking about isn't even trans.
We've allowed the medical profession to make a lot of decisions without scientific evidence, and that's why I'm a bit concerned.
The medical profession is making decisions without scientific evidence. Yeah, aren't they making them exclusively based on scientific evidence?
I wish that were the case.
It is the case that the medical community made recommendations based on science. And that the Premier of Alberta has made, you know, this is just factual. These new policies are in direct opposition to what health professionals are strongly suggesting. That's my understanding of this one. Rachel, have you been following this?
Yeah, I have, of course. Yeah. And that's what it is. Her policies are totally at odds with all the evidence out there about gender affirming care and sexual health and sports.
To get people, like, up to date, I want to look at the coverage of this, but just on a factual level, like, what are these policies? It took me a little while to get my head around it, but just from an explainer point of view, Globe and Mail and CBC were pretty helpful. So my understanding is it's like a whole suite of new policies, mostly concerning kids.
Mm-hmm.
Banning surgeries for kids under, what is it, 16?
Under 18.
Under 18. And it was helpful to not just give me that on a factual basis, because what I learned from the Globe and Mail is, like, those surgeries were already banned in some cases, because there's top surgery and then there's bottom surgery. And so, like, kids were not getting bottom surgery anyhow. That was an impossibility. And then I believe that there were only, like, under 100 cases total in the entire province of top surgery that were, like, somewhere between 16 and 18.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds about right. It's very, very few trans youth are actually getting medical intervention.
Massive amount of attention, a law basically to ban something that was only happening under 100 times in one case and not at all in the other. Maybe more frequently, trans kids would take hormone blockers.
Mm-hmm.
And now this policy speaks to that as well.
Yeah. And it also, it's just spewing so much misinformation even about hormone therapy and puberty blockers. She says that they're going to be restricted to stop youth from making irreversible changes to their body. When, first of all, parents are already required to give consent for their pubescent kids to receive puberty blockers and for teens to access hormones. You know, this isn't a decision that anyone takes lightly. And the effects of puberty blockers are short-lived. They are totally safe, as the evidence shows. They don't cause permanent physical changes to the body, nor do they negatively affect fertility. And the evidence actually shows that puberty blockers lead to better mental health for trans queer youth. But anyway, it's a very small number of trans youth are even seeking medical intervention. This is totally being blown out of proportion.
And, you know, the squeamishness about surgery at that vulnerable age, it seems kind of counterintuitive to prevent people from getting access to these blockers because then their bodies change in ways that they don't want. The logic of this kind of escapes me, but I'm not sure that logic is really at play here. Like,
no.
Just the insights that we get into Daniel Smith's own understanding of this are concerning. I just want to play you this one clip. Here's Daniel Smith expressing her concern about kids.
I certainly do not want children to be making decisions before maybe they've even had sex about whether they want to stop that aspect of their life.
Rachel, I want to pause and like take that sentence apart a little bit. So the Premier of Alberta, she's talking about kids. She does not want children to make decisions before they've even had sex. She wants those children to have sex, damn it.
Yeah, I hope not.
All right. If you were assigned female gender at birth and you're thinking about maybe taking a hormone blocker or getting this dreaded surgery, try out some D first, kids, says the Premier of Alberta.
Oh, God.
Before, I'm not sure that she thought through that whole sentence.
No, I don't think she's thinking through a lot of this, if she's being honest.
And also, we forgot one informational piece of this. Sex ed, like, forget about all this very specific stuff that people have been hearing so much about recently, but just sex ed is now like something that is going to be done very differently in Alberta. Anytime sex is mentioned in a classroom, you need to opt in and get permission from your parents.
Yeah, sex, even gender identity, anything about human sexuality, it will require parental notification and an opt-in requirement. Yeah, every time a teacher mentions anything to do with it.
Anytime you make something opt-in as opposed to opt-out, like, far fewer people will get it. The number of people who don't get sex education will go way up in Alberta. And, you know, like, teenage pregnancies have been going down in Alberta over 30 years. One wonders what effect this is going to have on that.
Yeah, it'll only go the other way. Like, kids need information about their bodies, about sexuality. It protects them.
So let me ask you this question. Danielle Smith, the Premier of Alberta, who is a staunch libertarian, doesn't want government intruding in people's personal lives, announcing an unprecedented level of government intervention into a very personal part of people's lives to prevent surgeries that are not even happening. Why?
I mean, that's the big question. I mean, I think it just really comes down to her pandering to her far-right base. You know, she wants to stay in power, plain and simple, and this is a great wedge issue to get votes. You know, back when she was running for party leadership in 2022, she said she did not want to debate these things in public. And she said, we shouldn't be making any child feel like the issues they're struggling with are something that's a political football. And that's precisely what she is doing. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty around gender and sexuality. You know, we're still figuring a lot of these things out. Words, meaning, definitions are changing. We're redefining these categories of man and woman. And I think she's just, you know, exploiting the confusion to take advantage of this unknown and to leverage it as this like highly emotional political issue. She's part of the same people and groups who fought against same-sex marriage and against abortion. And so this is their new emotional wedge issue to win elections. Yeah, why are they so obsessed with the trans youth, you know? Like, it's such a small, vulnerable minority. You know, this is very much kind of just like a made-up debate to win votes and also to distract from the real issues that these politicians should be addressing, you know, like housing and healthcare and groceries and making sure that queer and trans youth are actually safe and supported.
I think that it's impossible to talk about this without talking about the larger culture war hot button thing. Like, this played a big role in Ron DeSantis's campaign. And you're right that, like, the people who are actually being discussed here are a very small group of people and a very vulnerable group of people whose, I think, interests are being completely eclipsed by this larger concept that parents are under attack, that there is a coordinated campaign to indoctrinate and groom children into some sort of queer lifestyle. And it's a very sensitive issue for people who, looking at the schoolroom as some sort of extension of the state, of an intrusion of values into your right over your own child, and the idea that your kid might have secrets from you with their teacher, and the teacher's colluding with your kid. Maybe the teacher taught your kid to be trans, and now they're keeping secrets from you that the kids change their name and their pronouns. That is this sort of like ball of paranoia that has become very politically effective. And it's really depressing that Canadians just have to kind of huff whatever gases the Americans are spewing out.
But it's also been going on in Canada for a while, too. The parental rights thing came up when gay straight alliances started happening. you know, there was outcry about that. So I definitely noticed it been going on for several years here.
Sure, Jason Kenney, the same issue flared up there, and it's there's like even previous generations of this debate for sure.
Yeah, but it's, I don't know, it's really sad because this idea of parental rights, you know, it's just, it's being used to justify all this legislation related to gender identity here and in the U.S. But it's not about protecting queer and trans youth who are the most vulnerable. You know, it's really just about the far right weaponizing fear to increase their power. And one of the more like egregious policies that Smith announced is the policy that will require parental consent for youth 15 and under to change their pronouns or names at school. And for 16 and 17 year olds, their parents will be notified if they choose to change their name or pronouns. And so this policy will essentially require kids to either keep who they are a secret or be outed by the school to their parents, which can possibly put them in danger if they don't have supportive parents. It's just such a mean part of the policy. Like, it only serves to put trans youth in harm's way. Schools should be a safe place for kids to figure out who they are and their gender without fearing that they'll be outed to their family.
Let me read to you from something that's been written about this. I'm just going to read it to you first before I tell you what it is or who wrote it. Let's be perfectly clear about one thing. Alberta Premier Daniel Smith's new restrictions on treatments for trans youth are not targeted at trans youth and their families. They are targeted at people who believe that schools have become incubators of queerness and want it stamped out. With this new policy, Ms. Smith has increased the risk of teenage pregnancies in Alberta. Any decent sex ed curriculum will also teach children about people in their community who are LGBTQ. A few of the students in the class may be questioning their own sexuality. They will need support. Equally important, those who are straight will need to learn about those among them who are not. I'll keep going here. Kids in Alberta, straight kids and queer kids and trans kids need help in a hostile world. After all, some parents tell their children that queer folk are sinners or perverts or groomers. If the situation at home is a problem, then maybe teachers and counselors can help. But the Premier of Alberta is determined to curtail that help. It's a damn shame. Now, those words came from the very conservative columnist John Ibbotson at the Globe and Mail. And I think they deserve to be applauded, not because I happen to agree with them, but because this is like the good part of conservatism, right? Like, let's conserve a sex ed policy that was working and was effective at a public policy initiative of like dealing with teenage pregnancy, which is a problem. Let's be compassionate, and let's also keep government out of people's sex lives and people's relationships with their kids and kids' rights. What is conservatism at its best when it's a good thing is like protecting people's rights from intrusion, and these kids have a right to have supports if their families will not support them. So that was good to read, kind of surprising.
I mean, there's just nothing reasonable about these policies. They're definitely coming from the far right. And I'm sure some parents like may honestly think that these kinds of policies are helping trans and queer youth, but they're really doing the opposite. And they're actually, it's not just the restrictions that are harmful, it's that they actually encourage more fear and more hate. They lead to increased stigma, bullying, and violence for trans youth. So they have far-ranging effects, you know. Like, since the so-called 1 million March for Children last September, queer and trans youth across the country reported an increase in harassment and bullying and mental distress. So these have real-life consequences.
Real-life consequences. You make a terrific point, because it's like, when we talk about like just the numbers of people, I don't want that to sound like we're dismissing, like we're talking about a very small number of trans kids who this directly affects. And that's actually like more cause for concern, like to have just like a few dozen people in the case of the surgeries, or, you know, like a very small group of people who are at the center of this debate, this very intrusive debate, this very angry debate, and state intrusion is like really traumatic and harmful for a very small group of people. But there is a much larger group of queer kids who, like, what this says, it's going to have an impact. Like, what this says about the society you live in, the school that you go to, what other people's parents think about you, what your premier thinks about you, like, it reinforces an idea of otherness and weirdness, and that something has to be done about people like you.
For sure. And what's so, like, utterly naive about Smith's announcement video. I don't know if that's what we call it now. But this video where she announced all these policies with this kind of cheesy guitar music in the background and this kind of generic stock footage. She just speaks, you know, under the guise of being so caring. She cares so much about the trans children. She's just so confident that parents will, like, she says, quote, love and care for their children no matter what choices they make. And that parents who reject their trans or queer child are rare. She says it's rare, which is just not true. It's just very naive. According to one study by the Family Acceptance Project, 30% of families reject their child when they come out. And many are removed from their homes. You know, stats show that 20% of homeless youth identify as queer, trans, or not straight. Not to mention the rates of suicide are incredibly high for queer and trans youth, especially for those who are rejected by their families. So it's just, this is all very naive of Danielle Smith.
Yeah, but harmful nonetheless.
Yeah, you know, this new set is definitely Canada's harshest and most restrictive anti-trans policies so far, but it's happening in other provinces too. So it's a problem that really affects the whole country.
That's Shortcuts for this week. Rachel, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
We are on Twitter at CanadaLand. I can be emailed at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. Rachel, tell people where they could find your book.
Oh, yeah. Dead Mom Walking, a memoir of miracle cures and other disasters. Support your local indie bookstore.
It's an excellent book. Check it out. This episode is produced by Jess Schmidt with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.